This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. Our speaker today is Kathy Knisley, and she comes all the way from Sioux Narrows. And as you've gathered from the topic, she has had a lot of experience in parenting. and her husband have lived in Northern Ontario for, how many years is it again?
Almost 30.
And during that experience, she has had biological children and fostered many, many children. So I'm looking forward to hearing what she has to say today on how she has been able to parent that many children. So Kathy, welcome.
Well, first of all, just briefly answer that question about how I was able to parent that many children, not all at once and one day at a time. What I have to share with you today are truths that God has impressed on me along the way in my journey as a parent. And while my story is certainly not more important than any one of yours, I do believe that the things that I have to share with you that have brought me freedom and joy in my walk with Jesus are true for you as well. So as you hear what I share about what I hear Abba say to me, I just want you to take it to your heart and personalize his words, because they're yours as well as mine. But regardless of where you might be in your journey at the moment with God, I'm truly honored to give you a peek into mine, and thanks for being here. Our daughter-in-law, Abby, is one of those incurable baby lovers. I learned the importance of keeping a sharp eye out for her when she was only 4 years old, when it seemed as if my current baby was in danger of being loved to death. As she got older, babysitting was preferred over playing, and she would often, like even today, you'll often find her holding or playing with children when they're close by. When she and our son were planning their wedding, he informed me one day that he thinks every baby that Abby knows is going to be in the procession. Close to a dozen made it. So not quite all the children. But I'm fascinated by Abby's heart for children, because I was certainly not one of those girls. I wanted a family, but in my way and in my time and according to my schedule. And my selfishness and need to control my life ran pretty deep. My biggest fear in parenting was that I would give birth to a child who would never stop needing me. One who wasn't perfect. One who would tie me down and cause inconvenience. And you know, that wasn't even about, my hesitation wasn't even about the child's needs. That was about me. But you know, our Father loves children. He really, really loves children. They're all precious in his sight and in his eyes. Each one a plan in his heart from before the creation of the world. And God wanted my heart to be a reflection of his heart. And so he went to work to grow that in me, and that's my story today. Indulge me for a few minutes and just give me a few words really quickly. What comes to mind when you see this word? Perfect.
Impossible.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm actually looking for synonyms. But you are so right.
Flawless.
Flawless. More quickly.
Spotless.
Spotless.
Beautiful.
beautiful,
pure,
pure,
healthy.
Unbroken, whole. Clean. Okay, thank you. That's good. Perfect. This is what I was after. In my time and my schedule. Our first child was born the day after our second anniversary. Really cool timing. 2.5 years later, our son was born, and once again, I mean, son and a daughter. Great. Another 4 years passed, bringing yet another son and daughter. Each one was healthy, beautiful, and smart. It was perfect. Now, if I could somehow manage to be a perfect mother. Meanwhile, we had moved our family to Northwestern Ontario to work as church planters with Believers Fellowship. So now I had added missionary pastor's wife and homeschooling mom to my identity. And the list of what it took to keep it together grew longer. So I worked harder and was determined. To give it everything that I had to reach my goals, driven to get it right. Now, if you compare this with this, are you feeling any emotions? What's the word? What do you feel? Tired. Exhausted, right? Exhausting. Yes, it is. This was my idolatry. And it was wrapped in self-righteousness or self-condemnation, depending on the day. But as long as I was searching for my significance and satisfaction and security through my own efforts, I was blinded to my idolatry, to both my idolatry and my real identity. Because meanwhile, I really believed that my efforts were for Jesus. I was trying hard. It was at this point in my life that God seemed to get serious about prying my attention off myself and my abilities and my accomplishments in order to have me focus on Him. The next decade was a decade of loss, as one thing after another was stripped from me. During that decade, my mother passed away, we lost a baby. Church we were a part of fell apart, relationships were in shambles, and our reputation was trash. And while I don't believe that any of those things were God's will, I do believe that He is our Redeemer. And He works for me in every big and little thing. And God used those circumstances to strip away my idols of performance and the need that I had to be in control of my life. Not because He's unkind, but because He is so very good. So I was left feeling powerless and broken, but I needed to lose control in order to stop running in circles with my nose to the ground, with all of this drivenness and exhaustion. One morning when I was about halfway through my fifth pregnancy, because of my ignorance and in my haste to get the next thing done, our unborn baby died. Strangely, one thing I noticed after experiencing this loss was a greater love for the children that we already had. I had loved them before, of course, but loss broke my heart, and tears softened it, and I understood in a greater way that my children were really a gift from God. They were not just part of my plan that I had, that it had happened because it was my plan. A softened heart is an enlarged heart, and an enlarged heart has room for more love. So God had broken the ground and planted the seed of love, of his love in my heart, and a little sprout was starting to grow. Now, I was familiar with the foster care system through some of my siblings who had fostered, but I'd never considered doing it. Selfishly, I didn't want to be tied down and inconvenienced. But then one day, some of our friends were in trouble, and they pled with us to take their baby, who was being removed from their home. Well, needless to say, we wouldn't have been able to have done that without becoming approved foster parents, and the rest is history. I learned through that if God has a blessing in mind for me, he's not deterred by my resistance. And I think that I can imagine him smiling, actually, as he tricked me into being extravagantly blessed. Over the next years, little ones came and went. Some stayed for several weeks, some for several months, some only for a few days. And while their stories were varied, they all held one thing in common, and that was an aching little heart that needed love and security. And as God continued to soften my dry, crusty heart through their tears, I learned to love children. The hardest goodbye came in the middle of that decade of loss that I had mentioned earlier. Riley had been with us for almost 4 years, and she fit into our family like a hand in a glove. After she was gone, we felt the need for a little break, a time of healing before we took another child. The agency was fine with that, and they accepted our decision. But less than a week had passed after she had left us before they called with a special case. We were torn because we wanted to make the best decision for our family and for the child, and we didn't know what we should do. So at that point, we told God, but not the agency, that we would always say yes. And if it wasn't best for us, if the fit wasn't right for us or for the child, that we trust him to close the doors. Now, interestingly enough, until this time, there had only been 3 weeks total from the time that we had been approved as foster parents until that point in time that we didn't have a child in our home. 3 weeks, it had been years, I'm not sure how many. Over the next 14 months, we got 6 calls. And each time we said yes. And each time we got a call back informing us that for one reason or another, they wouldn't need us after all. And finally, our worker apologized. She said, "I don't understand what's happening. This has never happened before, but she hopes we don't get discouraged." And I smiled and assured her it's fine. I knew that God was answering our prayer. I thought that maybe he was saying that the foster parenting era was over for us. Still clueless of the tremendous treasure that he was creating for me. But in August of 2007, we got a call that changed our lives forever. We said yes, but by that time we weren't even a little bit surprised when a day later they called back and said, "No, not after all. The doctors were unwilling to release this baby to us because we lived an hour from the nearest hospital, and they expected that he would spend most of his first 6 months in one." A few days passed, and we were called again, and several agencies had searched, and no home was found for this 6-week-old, 5-pound baby boy with fetal alcohol syndrome. He had been overdue, they said, and had weighed only 3 pounds at birth, they said. He was abandoned by his mom. She walked out the day after she had given birth by a cesarean. He had heart issues. He needed specially thickened formula so he wouldn't breathe his food into his lungs. Feedings happened every 90 minutes, day and night, and if it took him longer than 30 minutes to get the ounce down, we had to stop feeding him so that he wouldn't use more energy than he would gain. Would we still be willing to look after him? And so he came. Jaquel Ozziah Davis Loon Belmore. And at 6 weeks old, this swallowed him. He was so fragile at the beginning that even spending 1 hour with people, his whole body would go into tremors when we'd take him home and back to his room. His cry was so weak. It was just like a tiny little kitten. And even if we were outside his bedroom door with the door closed, you couldn't hear him cry. Years later, they didn't tell us this at the time, but years later, the experts told us that they hadn't expected him to live, not to mention that he would probably never walk or talk. Jaquel is 9 and a half now. He's never spent a day in a hospital. He's an unstoppable ball of energy. He thinks out loud. He chatters incessantly. Life is extremely challenging for him because of his brain injury. But his resilience and his accomplishments astound me. He's amazing and beautiful and smart and, dare I say, perfect. Because you see, Jaquel was born in the heart and mind of God before the creation of the world. His very existence brings God glory. His worth and value and purpose have never been threatened by the circumstances he finds himself in, or the choices that his parents made. I grieve the suffering and losses that Jaquel experiences because of sin. But I also rejoice because our Father redeems sadness and brokenness. I'm learning that God's idea of perfection is vastly different from mine. And while I might think spotless and unbroken and clean, I'm learning that God's definition is simply redeemed. Inside and see my brokenness and imperfection and disappointment, I'm learning to listen to God's whisper. And I hear him say, "Dear sweet child, watch me glorify my name and create breathtaking beauty out of your sadness. One day, everything sad and broken will come untrue. And it will somehow be greater for having once been broken. Old things will pass away, and all things will be made new. Redemption is my essence," he says. "It's what I do best." Isaiah 40, verse 4, "Every valley will be filled in, every mountain and hill will be made level. The rough ground will be smoothed out, the rocky places will be made flat. Then the glory of the Lord will appear, and everyone will see it. I, the Lord, have spoken." And as his amazing grace becomes my reality, my soul quiets like a little child in the arms of a strong father. What a relief to find that it's not all about me and my perfect performance, or my ability to think through all possible outcomes in order to keep it all together and safe for me and my children. I have a perfect father who redeems with joyful abandon. He takes full responsibility for my redemption onto himself. He has begun a good work in me, and he will finish it. I am his, hidden in Christ, in God. Now, Jaquel is intellectually challenged through no fault of his own. He was born with a brain that's permanently damaged because of his mother's choices. I don't expect him to act like a typical 9-year-old, because I know that's impossible for him. I know his limitations. When he has a total meltdown because he's been overstimulated by too many people in a room full of too much noise, I don't see it as a temper tantrum and punish his behavior. That would be cruel. I understand that noise in an FASD brain can literally feel like it's been amplified 10 times. I'd have a meltdown too. So instead, we work to teach coping mechanisms. We purchase noise-canceling headphones. We try to remember to prepare him for what to expect in every situation. And when he's needing to socialize, we become super vigilant. Every small accomplishment and step forward that he makes is a cause for rejoicing. I'm not angry because he's 9 and a half and he hasn't gotten it sooner. I'm delighted that this amazing, resilient child has gotten here at all. I love him, not in spite of his brokenness, but perhaps even more because of it. And then I experienced another moment of truth. And now pardon me as I use an inappropriate term in order to make a point. When I compare myself to Jesus, I am so, so retarded. Sin left me broken and without options. I don't have the ability to live up to my own standards, not to mention God's. And if I allow guilt and frustration to make my brokenness my focus, I quickly end up feeling forsaken, forgotten, frustrated, and afraid. But in that moment, I can almost hear the Father chiding me. And he says, "Daughter, are you a more loving and compassionate parent than I am?" If you, being evil, know how to be good to this needy child, how could I possibly love you any less tenderly? You, just like Jaquel, will never be able to live independently. I don't expect it. I'm not threatened because you're retarded. I understand you. I understand your limitations better than you will ever understand yourself. He doesn't realize. Trust me. Don't be afraid. My love will cast out your fear. And I find God's truth to me in Isaiah 49, 14 through 16 and verse 26. But Zion said, "The Lord hath forsaken me. The Lord has forgotten me." And God's reply is, "Can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion for the child she's born? Well, though she may forget, I will not forget you. See, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. All mankind will know that I, the Lord, am your Savior, your Redeemer, the Mighty One of Jacob. I am Abba's heart child. He will never forsake me. He knows my frame. He remembers I'm dust. He doesn't lose heart because of my neediness and brokenness. In fact, might it even possibly cause him to love me more? Someone has said that people with FASD can only be as good as the people that they're with. Part of the reason for this is that they get their cues on how to behave from whoever they happen to be in contact with. And since they can't stop, and analyze in the moment whether something is right or wrong, they tend to simply go with the flow. So Jaquel does much better when he has access to a dependable second brain. When he's in a situation where there's too much going on and he feels unsure of what's expected, he'll often act out like a dinosaur. Who knows why? Maybe it's easier for him to imagine proper dinosaur behavior than proper boy behavior. But the minute that we see a hint of tooth or claw, we know that we need to be right on it. And he needs to be guided very specifically. Jaquel, remember, you're not a dinosaur. You're a boy. Boys use words. They don't growl. Boys walk on 2 feet. They don't crawl around and leap. Well, they might, but it's rewarding to watch his transformation from fear and uncertainty to peace and security when he's guided well. Because without a second brain, he simply can't function. And then I realize that I too am only as good as who I hang with. My challenge is to remember and abide in who I am in Jesus every hour and every day. It's when I forget who I am that I too lash out in fear and anger, condemning myself and others, and once more searching for significance and identity in this world. But if I remember and stop, I can hear Abba whispering, "Precious daughter, don't attempt to be any other identity. You're forever my beloved daughter. Live and abide in me and in my state of being. I will guide you with my eye. In me, burdens are light, and contentment and peace rule your heart. And even in this world, you will experience trouble and heartache. Live in joy, because I have overcome the world." These are some truths that settled in on me as a result of receiving what I thought I never wanted. And I thank Jesus for this perfectly imperfect little man. But sometimes, truth catches me in sweet, unexpected ways. Jaquel uses Plato every day as a way to stay grounded and to create order in his brain. His creations come alive as he tells himself stories for hours at a time. He often becomes totally engrossed in his imagining, and Plato literally seems to sprout wings. One day, while cleaning it off the floor again, I reminded him again to please try and be more careful. And this particular time, he immediately hopped off his chair, picked up a few pieces, ran to me, and while giving me a big hug, he said, "I'm sorry, Mommy. I will never, ever make a mess again." That's been 3 years ago, and he's never made a mess since. Just kidding. I thanked him, and I hugged him back, and I smiled to myself, because I knew he'd be making more messes. And you know, at that moment, it almost seemed as if I caught Abba's wink, and I heard him say, "I understand your intentions and your desire to please me. I don't in the least bit despise your imperfect efforts, but neither do I depend on them. You are my precious daughter. You are not a mistake when you make a mistake. My love and acceptance of you depend on who I am, not on your efforts." What freedom and joy. We live in northwestern Ontario, where the bush, as Canadians call the wilderness that stretches for miles in every direction, is part of our backyard. Now, since Jaquel could get hopelessly lost within minutes, his boundaries are the grass on our yard, unless an adult's with him. One day, when he and my husband Daryl were walking the trails behind our property, Daryl thought maybe he could reinforce the idea of the danger that's out there if he takes him home just cutting through the bush. So they cut through the trees to get home, and at one point where nothing looked familiar, he asked Jaquel whether he thought they were lost. The lesson was totally lost on him, because without any hesitation, his chirper little reply was, "Nope, I'm with you." Ah, Jaquel. Thanks for the reminder to focus on who I'm with at 3 a.m. in the morning, when my anxious thoughts fly 1,000 different directions. Because life gets scary. And this world's a wilderness. And what if we lose our way? But just as Jaquel had absolutely nothing to fear in an otherwise unsafe environment, because he was with his dad, even so, my anxiety does nothing to enhance my security. I'm with the Father. He will never, ever, ever leave me. Now, had Jaquel been unable to trust Daryl in that situation, he wouldn't have increased his own security. Neither would Daryl have said, "Oh, you don't think I can take you home? Well, okay then, I guess I won't take you home." What would have? What difference would it have made? He wouldn't have had a good time with his dad. He wouldn't have enjoyed the journey. What a tragedy if we allow our anxieties to rob us of the joy of the journey with our Father. One of my favorite stories is easier to show than to tell. This happened one day before Christmas when I set up the manger scene, and Jaquel wasn't with me when I did this. I did it earlier in the day, and later on I was in the kitchen, and he came rushing to me all excited and said, "Mommy, Mommy, come quick, come and see. I did the most important thing." So I went and saw. And that's what he had done. His words are really the only ones that are needed. There's nothing more important than adoring Jesus. As you continue your journey with your Father, I hope you'll remember 7 truths from mine. First, your value lies in whose you are, not in the circumstances you find yourself in. Your value lies in whose you are, not in the circumstances you find yourself in. 2, Abba's love for you can be trusted. It's who he is. 3, because you are spiritually, intellectually, and emotionally challenged, you need access to Abba's brain. He doesn't even expect you to get it on your own. 4, you'll keep making messes. It's okay. You're not a mistake when you make a mistake. 5, perfection in God's definition is different from mine. His is one word, redeemed, and this is his business. 6, when life gets scary, remember who you're with. 5, remember, nothing is more important than adoring Jesus. Thank you for coming in this evening.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.